sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobia, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends, though the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, hey, hey. 2021.
Hey, shut the fuck up.
That's what's up.
Shut up!
You cannot talk!
Episode 127. Keeping the smile off their white face. Let us start. Now they're after me. Why? Because a nigga's black. Spitting facts, ain't afraid to pull a trigger back. Let them come step to a real motherfucker. Boom, boom, mama didn't raise no suckers. Dan Quayle, don't you know you need your ass kicked? Where was you when there was niggas in the casket? Motherfucker rednecks all the same. Fear a real nigga if he ain't bald and chain. Oh my God. That deserves a good. Brah, 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 brah. That deserves, okay, I'm gonna, sorry. Sorry, boys and girls, I forgot. I'm in the middle of reading poetry. Let me start that again. Not the whole thing, okay. Dan Quayle, don't you know you need your ass kicked? Where were you when there was niggas in the casket? Motherfuckers redneck all the same. Fear a real nigga if he ain't bald and chain. That's why we burn shit and wreck. Cause the punk police ain't learned the shit yet. You motherfuckers gonna pay the price. Can't make a black life. Don't take a black life. Oh my God, Pac. Damn. It's on the next real nigga fall dead. Dread, Jerry curl process or a bald head. Oh, I thought you said wrong. Okay. Be prepared for the smoke to bust. What niggas need to do is start looking up. United we stand, divided we fall. They can shoot one nigga, but they can't take us all. Let's get along with the Mexicans. Okay, I'm going to modify that word. Let's get along with the Arabs and the Mexicans. I guess I should need to say Asians and indigenous. You know, okay, stick to Pac's line. Let's get along with the Mexicans, and we could all have peace on the sets again. Imagine if that took place. Keeping the smile off their white face.
Message.
I ain't racist, but let's trade places. Trace the hate, then face it. One nigga teach two niggas. Teach three niggas. Four niggas. And them niggas teach more niggas. One nigga teach two niggas. Three niggas. Four niggas. And them niggas teach more niggas. And when we blast, it'll be the biggest blast you heard. And them is my last words. Oh my God, yo, this deserves a... Yep. And where is this shit? And the, no, not that. No, not that. Oh, okay, I guess I didn't save it. I guess I didn't save it. Gunshot. Yeah, I really badly need a gunshot. A very bad. You know what? It's gonna be a long episode. So let's stick to the program. B Black. All right. Yeah. Last word by Tupac, but I'll elaborate in final thoughts. All right. Hey. Welcome. Bienvenue. Another episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black. A.K.A. MrShutUpPodcast.com, A.K.A. Le Grand Papa B. Ding, 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 ding. All right. Before I start the show, I want to welcome back you returning listeners and want to also welcome you new listeners, but I got to warn you. This podcast is protected by the red, the black, and the green. It waves a red, black, and a red, blue flag. Rouge et bleu is up in this bitch. I represent and hold it down for black folks who grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and Soul in the City on Much Music. Check it out. Today's the Sabbath. The Sabbath, and I'm doing work, so I'm going to hell. Today's date is November 19th. Is that right? Yeah, November 19, 2023. And this episode is being recorded on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin territory. Again. This episode is also brought to you by the letter F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. Gino X. Yeah, okay. Yeah, hey, welcome, boys and girls. Just to start out, I'd like to, again, welcome you new listeners, and just to, just give you a heads up or, help you get situated. So on my podcast, on my episodes, I like to break it down into three parts, or three acts, if you will. And the first act is the introduction. Second one is news and random thought. And the last one is final thought. Final thought usually relates to the title. In the introduction, I like to do shit like I just did, is, play the theme song, start off with the theme song, tell you the title, like I said, 127, keeping the smile off their white face, read you some poetry. In this case, in particular case, it came from Tupac Shakur. And then, give you like a, what do you call those things at the beginning? This episode is rated PG. Well, that long welcome, and before I start rated, yeah, it's my way of saying this podcast is rated black. Well, this podcast is rated black Canadian, and is very insensitive to white fragility, right? And also during the introduction, I'd like to share a little bit of history, and some quotes. And today's history is, just a reminder, is I'm going to go, because I have all this up, all up in tabs. You don't know what I'm talking about. First one is Tupacalypse Now was released. Tupacalypse, which is Tupac's first album, was released on November 12th, 1991. And I still remember purchasing that album. It was on CD. I bought the CD, but doesn't matter. Yeah. So that's out the way. Second, Act of Fool came out, was released on November 15, 1998 by King T. Yeah, if you know, you know. What else? Dr. Dre, the 2001 album, was released on November 16, 1999. It's a sophomore album? Yeah. I still remember, man. It was a dope-ass album, and I do not regret paying for it. Paying for it like it was sex. What else? Black Green album by Queen Latifah had that came out in November 16th. That was released November 16th, 1993. You know, I'm trying to remember, because I remember purchasing this album too, and I likely didn't purchase it in November. See, the thing is, back in those days, these albums were sent to, were imported. So one, it was more expensive. And two, we would get it after everyone else got it. Yeah. You kids don't know how good you got it these days. Yeah, there's a lot of history we're going through, man. November 16, 1999, Corrupt Young Gotti released his sophomore album too. Streets is a Mother. You know what's funny is it doesn't matter. I'm not sure. For some reason, I was unaware of this album. Like, it was someone who just posted it. I'm like, holy shit, I've never heard this. Oh, right, I would see it, but I can't remember why I didn't purchase it. All I know is that's minus one on my West Coast hip-hop fan card. Damn, there's a lot of dates, yeah? November 17, 1992, Ice Cube released his third album, The Predator. Is Predator the one with Wicked? You know, I didn't do the research. I'm just sharing some quick facts, a little bit of history. And that's it for dates. I'm sure there's a lot that I missed or that I didn't catch, but all these dates I just pick up. They just appear on my timeline, and I decide to share it with y'all. Another thing I like to do in the introduction is quotes. And this one goes, today's quote comes to us. I discovered it on Instagram, on my Instagram timeline, and it comes from Library Mindset. And it touched me in the soul, and it said, your ability to feel other people's pain doesn't mean it's your responsibility to fix it. That's amazing. Oh, there's more. Okay. Before you heal someone, ask him if he's willing to give up the things that make him sick. Oh, the Hippocrates. Okay, it's not the it's a follow-up, but it's not the same people. Okay, the first quote came from Joyful Smoth. I don't know what that means. I'm sure I'm not reading it right. Or whatever, okay. It's not a person. It's a group that created with that came out with the first quote. Second one is, before you heal, Hippocrates, before you heal someone, ask him if he's willing to give up the things that make him sick. This one from Leonardo da Vinci. Nothing strengthens authority so much as silence. Welcome to Shut Up Podcast. If you have the ability to love, love yourself first. Amen, Charles Bukowski. Man, I think, you know what? I think I'm going to read about his life, man. I'm going to buy his book. Because that dude stay coming out with quotes that I like. Next one. Thinking is difficult. That's why most people judge. Carl Jung. And this is the last one from Jiddu Krishnamurti. Anyways, the ability to observe without evaluating is the highest form of intelligence. And I believe that. All right, and this concludes the introduction for episode 127. Now we jump into news and random thoughts, and there's like random thought. Just like the title says, I just go through some random thoughts and use. So, wow. Let's do this, all right? You ready? Let's go. All righty, boys and girls. Okay. First things first. I just realized as I'm describing news and random thoughts, I want to be clear that the point to all this is I'm pondering thoughts. I'm pondering ideas. I didn't know that was a thing. I was listening to the story, and the author was describing the character, and they said one of their traits was pondering ideas, and I'm like, yeah, that's what I do. That's what I like doing. I remember I was at work. Okay, if you hadn't guessed, I think a lot. A lot of my usernames relate to the fact that I think a lot. I put a lot of thoughts into good and bad. Right. Probably the worst advice someone has ever given me as a child was think before you act. Because ever since then, all I've been doing is thinking. Like, to the point, like, I cock block my own self and shit like that. You know what I mean? But it is what it is. I've made peace with it. It's a trait. I'm slowly getting better at knowing when it's okay to, like, when sometimes it's just act, and sometimes, you know, it's my challenge. It's my challenge. It's my blessing and curse to work with. But with that said, a lot of what I do on this podcast, specifically using random thoughts and final thoughts, I'm pondering ideas. There's things I'll be talking about. It's less about the people. It's more about how I felt, how that person made me feel. I'm that's the part I'm trying to get honest. Like, if you ever catch me gossiping or being petty you find, like, I'm less about the thought and more about the person or more about the person. Like, if let's say, for example, we know each other and you hear me bring up an incident that happened between us, it's less about who you are as a human being. It's more about how that situation either made me feel, caused me to think, and whatnot. In other words, it's like what makes you, it's like I'm trying to distinguish myself from the people who just talk shit about other people, and as opposed to just journal. It's just journaling, so to speak. But it is what it is. Yeah, I guess I'll. Who are you trying to convince, B Black? I think it's. This is more for myself than it is for you, the audience. But yeah, like I was saying, is I love to think. I just do it naturally. It's just something I think a lot, and it'd be great if I could find a job that pays me for it. My challenge, though, is as I process these thoughts, the challenge is sharing these thoughts with another human being, whether it's verbally or written. That's never been my my forte. It's always been a challenge. It's always been difficult because in my mind, the thought is perfect. But when I put it out into the world, well, first, the mechanism to go from my mind and expose it to the world is not perfect. And two, the person processing it may not receive it in the way that I intended it, or does receive it in the way that I intended, and causes me to to wonder whether I should have shared it in the first place. I'm just saying the process of sharing thoughts is the difficulty, is the challenge. That's what this podcast is about. Right now, I'm just in the habit of just push it out, man. Just stop. Don't overthink it. Just put it out there. With that said, there's a lot of topics in the news and random thoughts. And what's funny is I really want to focus on final thoughts. But whatever. It's likely going to be a long podcast. You know what? It's not my intention, but I tell you what. Okay. You know what? I'm starting with an apology. No. Let's get through this. But I'm warning you that there's a lot to go through. Actually, I'll just give you a heads up. Okay. On News and Random Thoughts, I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Oh, it's not that bad. Okay, well, okay, let's go. Let's just get started. First things first. I recently watched a video by... Okay, I didn't load it the first time. Oh, because I don't want it to play. It doesn't matter, right? I recently watched a video on YouTube. Yeah, on YouTube.
Imagine a studio...
Oops, sorry. Explaining how the earth is flat. I'm kidding. That was a bad joke. No, you know what it is? It's a video...
full of people laughing as your beats play...
Oh my God. It's so frustrating when you tell the computer pause and it just ignores you. And it just makes me angry. Anyways, yes. Okay. I discovered a video on YouTube. Shout out to their algorithm for suggesting it to me. And it's content creator's name is Navi D. And the title of the video that I watched is The Unwanted Kanye Beats Everyone Rejected. It's a 9-minute, 13-second clip. I recommend watching it if you're a Kanye fan, hip-hop fan, or just into the music, or whatever. It's a lot of food for thought. But the real reason that I'm bringing it up, I'm discussing it, because while I was watching it, it had me think about the creative process and how for me, made me realize, so I'm also a creative, I can be a creative human being, but my challenge, I noticed that the hardest part in the creative process is liking what I create or giving myself props or convincing myself, believing in what I created. That is dope. I'm so used on, I've gotten used to giving more credit to other people's opinions about something I created than my own. I used to be in a rap group back in the days in high school. And yeah, man. And the rhymes, I remember writing and they looked clever. But I needed someone else to say, yeah, it's dope. And here's the worst part. Even if they said that it was good, I'd be like, nah, fuck that. It can't be because it came from me. All this to say is, as I'm listening to this video, this clip about Kanye West making beats, creating beats, and how sometimes his beats were rejected. This was the early days of Kanye. Sometimes they were rejected. There are beats he made that you're like, what the fuck? How did that get rejected? How some got rejected and some got accepted. And how he would charge $2,000, like $5,000 for his beats. And it's more, I was just fascinated at the whole, how these human beings believed in themselves, in their art. That's a fascination for me. That's another one. That's who I'm hoping to reach out. People who are fascinated at people who are fascinated at folks who can make art and say, "Yo, this shit, this is the shit. I live by it. I'm willing to fight for this shit." It's a fascinating thing. And again, I'm growing and to become one of those people that can. Here, I made this, and I believe it's dope. Yeah, so as I'm listening to this this story about Kanye's journey, two things. One, it was Kanye making beats and having the courage to say, yo, Jay-Z, Scarface, all these big names, Common, check this out. And also, on the flip side, these rappers were like, they trusted themselves enough to decide between, no, I'm going to pass on that beat. No, this is the beat I want for this rhyme. Like, they trusted themselves enough. They had belief, trust in themselves, in their taste. That's what I'm trying to get at. Because there have been moments where, even Common was probably the worst, the worst guiltiest of them all, is he passed on some beats that other rappers took or that Kanye ended up reusing on his using on his first album. And the fact that, it's the fact that Common recognized that he fucked up. But at the time, I'm sure he believed he knew what he was doing. Later, he knew he fucked up. And I like how in that 9-minute video, it didn't consist of people beating themselves up for fucking up. Man, I knew I should have taken it. Why the fuck did I trust my own gut? I should have taken it. Anyway, watching this video was more a journey reminding me of the creative process. And the hardest part of the creative process is believing in your art or believing in your creation. All right, next item. Okay. This guy is, this would make me laugh. Okay, you guys heard about the stand up your butt. Fist fight at U.S. Senate. Okay, stand up, stand your butt. Fist fight at the U.S. Senate averted as Bernie Sanders steps in. And go for Globe and Mail. Okay, I'm going to play this clip even though you can't see it. But just to give you some context to the video I'm about to play, it goes, tensions were running high on Capitol Hill on Tuesday after U.S. Senator, okay, that's Tuesday, November 5th. The article came out on November 15th. So November 14th, Tuesday, that's what we're talking about, right? Yes, I know, by internet standard, this is old news, but I'm going to explain to it while I'm sharing it. All right, tensions were running high on Capitol Hill on Tuesday after U.S. Senator challenged the president of the Teamster Union to fight in the middle of a committee hearing. Not thankfully, the two men did not come to blows after the incredulous Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders stepped in and told them to settle down. Now, I'm going to play this clip of the confrontation. It's kind of interesting. So, and the person you're going to hear doing the talking is talking shit is Senator Mark Wayne Mullen of Oklahoma. And the person responding is the Teamster. Here we go.
Quit the tough guy act and these Senate hearings. You know where to find me, any place, any time, cowboy.
Call him a cowboy.
Sir, this is a time, this is a place. If you want to run your mouth, we can be two consenting adults. We can finish it here.
Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?
I'd love to do it right now.
Well, stand your butt up then.
You stand your butt up.
Oh, hold on. Oh, stop it.
Is that your solution, every poll?
No, sit down. Sit down. Okay. You're a United States Senator. Sit down.
Active.
Oh, okay. You have the mic. Yeah. You have time.
All right.
Make your statement.
Then let's do this. Because I did challenge you, and I accepted your challenge, and you went quiet.
No, I didn't go quiet. Challenged me to a cage match, like a 12-year-old schoolyard bully.
Excuse me. Hold it. No, excuse me.
I will say exactly.
Senator Mullen, I have the mic.
I want to expose this thug to who he is.
And could you not point at me? That's disrespectful.
I don't care about respecting you at all. I don't respect you at all.
Yes, boys and girls, you're correct. Those were two grown men. I'm not mad at the guy, the Teamster responding, but I'm not critical of him. I'm more critical of the mother. Senator, what's his name? Mark Wayne? Mark Wayne. Holy shit. Just like French people, except without the dash in his name. Yeah. He's got two first names. It doesn't matter. The reason I shared this clip is because it reminded me of how growing up, those were the boys I found myself looking up to. The tough guys, the put on the show, the performance guys, right? And I thought they were tough guys for doing what they would do. You know what? This reminded me of a theory that actually my brother brought up this one. It's he's got this theory on confrontation, and it's like, it's like two dudes come up, and one's and they both raise each other. It's like, yeah, you talk some shit, and the other person putting the other person in a situation to respond. Yeah, I'm talking shit, and the other one, what are you gonna do about it? Well, I'm gonna kick your ass. What are you gonna do about it? Well, I'm gonna kick your ass even harder. Well, won't you come here? You know what I mean? And then you keep escalating until the first punch is thrown. But that's not the point where I'm trying to get at. What I'm trying to get at is how growing up, I used to look up to people. I didn't know better. Look, I'll put it on this earth and no one gives you guideline on who you should. I feel like I had to navigate this whole being a boy, being a man by myself, figure it out on my own. All right. So, this is dedicated to anyone who, as a boy, grew up idolizing all the wrong people. Now, the moment I realized that I was idolizing the wrong people is after I did some I did some boxing training, not to be a boxer, just because I wanted to lose weight and maybe, you know, and try to be a little better with my hands or be better with my hands. And because I didn't want to be 36 in a karate class. Taibo. Anyway, no. I remember training in boxing, and I had this thought and realized that, oh, the folks who can fight don't need to convince the world they can't fight. The folks who can fight are the ones who will be like, yeah, okay, all right, you think I'm a bitch? So be it. Yeah, you think I'm a pussy? Right, what's that line by Biggie? Goes, think I'm pussy? I dare you to stick your dick in this. Like, they don't need to put on a performance to show you that they can fight. Now, I remember tweeting this about how, okay, this dude can't, it's tweeting the thought of like, it's always a dude who can't fight that wants to show the world they can fight. And some random dude on the internet responded, well, he's 3-0 in UFC fighting. Like, I don't know, I guess he's, not UFC, but I guess he used to do MMA fighting back in high school, from what I understand. And he's got a 3-0 record, so 3 wins, 0 loss, some shit like that. And, well, that doesn't impress me. It just means that he likely fought people he can't win against. Or a doozy that didn't challenge him. Or maybe he got lucky. Or maybe, you know what, even, or maybe he's got fighting skills, but he doesn't have that thing in him that allows him to believe he's got fighting skills. He's like equivalent to the cop with a gun and at beats on his wife. You know what I mean? Like there's something like real gangsters would see right through the Mark Wayne of the world. It's all an act. Now, I wouldn't pick a fight with him, but I'm saying he was not worthy on my journey to being a respectable, a strong man. He was not someone worthy of my attention. That's it. All right. Okay. I'm getting through this. You know what? This feels like I'm like a teacher trying to go through the syllabus, and we're gonna cram this lessons in your head. Okay. This one goes something. Iman Vellani said. Iman Vellani, she's one of the actors in the Marvel movie, and actress, whatever. Anyway, she just said she's got a quote that I feel is worth repeating, and it's like dope ass. It's really mature for her to have shared this, right? And she goes, in regards to the box office, she goes, the box office has nothing to do with me. Vellani continues, I'm happy with the finished product, and the people that I care about enjoyed the film. It's genuinely a good time watching this movie, and that's all we can ask for with these films. Oh, wow. It has superheroes. It takes place in space. It's not that deep. And it's about teamwork and sisterhood. It's fun movie, and I'm just so happy that I can share it with people. You know, this is one of those, I'm still working on this. It's like me believing that I have a strong podcast, despite the fact that I don't have like a high download numbers. And when I say high, like the kind of download numbers that would allow me to get advertisement, have advertisement on my show. Yeah, I think it was great to be reminded. It reminded me of, yeah, the creative process. Sometimes it's not, how do I say this? I was going to say, it's not about just the results. It's, did you create something you liked? That's what it's about. And if I'm currently on a journey when it comes to this podcast, my current journey is making this podcast. It's like a recipe. And then I'm like, damn, this shit's good. Like getting this podcast to a point that I'm willing to stake my I would bet the bank on it kind of thing. Like right now, I know there's a few areas of improvement, but there are areas of improvement that I've seen that I'm willing to work. See, old me would have been like, hey, yes, let me get your criticism and being everything that everyone else wants me to be, as opposed to like getting so much constructive criticism. Like I'm as much as I'm sensitive to constructive criticism, I understand its value. But my problem is when you take it to the point of creating something someone else would have created if they were you, as opposed to creating something that you wanted to create. See, I used to be in the Toastmaster program, and we used to, you know, you give your speech, and one of the practices in Toastmasters is getting feedback on your speech. And, which is great, but sometimes I remember getting to a point where I would get feedback, and I'm like, yeah, but that's not what I was trying to accomplish with this thing. Initially I would just, okay, all feedback is great. Just incorporate everyone's feedback. But sometimes you got to be able to listen to feedback. There's feedback that you should reject. Perfect example. I love that line by Jay-Z. He says, how do you rate music that thugs relate to? Like if Jay-Z paid attention to all the critics, And the critics are people who he didn't never intended for this music to be created for. Like, that's when you say shit, hey, you don't like my shit, you can press fast forward. You know what I mean? Anyway, I'm just saying, I love what she shared. And she goes, the box office numbers have nothing to do with me. What I know is I worked my ass off. I did what I showed up. Did my job, did everything I was supposed to do. If the captain fucked up, if the publisher fucked up, if the marketer fucked up, if we put out a product that the market is not ready to handle because it involved three female leads, then, you know, I can't call it. I'm not going to cry over the fact that, you know, it is what it is. I get to say that I was in a Marvel movie. So, yo, I really love that she shared, that she said this, and it encourages me as a content creator. So shout out to Iman Valeni. Man, all right, so glad I did this. Okay, you know what's killing me is my ADD's kicking it. Is my notification is, oh, okay, I should not read this. Okay, I'll read this later. Sorry, someone, I got a notification on Twitter, and that blue mark was driving me nuts. And then I went to click on the comment, and that shit looks a little too deep to read right now. All right. I thought it was just a like. That's why. All right. Okay. What next? Okay. You know what happened this week? Aside from Andre 3000 releasing an album where he's just playing the flute, but I'll cover that in Final Thoughts. But so apparently, open and shut case. The headline goes, I'm not going to read the article, it goes, Sean Diddy Combs, singer Cassie settles lawsuit accusing rap mongol of rape and abuse. I remember on Thursday watching my timeline and it was filled with articles of how Casey was suing Puffy for, you know, 10 years, but basically putting that poor woman through hell. And of course, you know, all the male, the manosphere jumped out to, yo, she's just doing this for money. It's fucked up. The reaction was just fucked up, but I'm not going to focus on that. Let me focus on what I wrote. I'm going to focus on the fact that when I heard this story, one is, it had me thinking of when these things happen, I think society's default setting is to assume that, not listen to the woman. She's just doing this for money. Poor Puffy is just a rich and powerful man being attacked by some skeezer. I don't know, whatever. It's like on one end you got the rich and powerful man being played for his money, but on the other end you got the woman like, what if she's telling the truth? That's my point. There's a lot of people who've automatically dismissed what she said and not taking the time to take it, what she has to say, seriously. Now, I won't lie. I heard the story. Of course, I stretch on the other side of the pendulum, but I'm like, Casey, I want to hear your story. And I'll be honest, man, I could not be on that jury because a part of me kind of wants to believe. It's not just, Casey, I want to hear your story. I think there's a part of me that's more, fuck you, Puffy. I hope he goes to jail. Now, what messes things up is how they settled the situation. And what got me is, because I read the article before recording this podcast, and they talk about how they resolved it amicably. Bro, I don't know how you resolve a lawsuit accusation, a rape and abuse accusation amicably. That shit does not get resolved. Oh, okay, I just, you know, oh, it was just one big misunderstanding, but whatever. But from what I understand, I think the closest I could get to understanding the story, I think Casey was just like, it was less about the money. It was more about, hey, asshole, you did this to me. And since shooting you in the head is illegal, I'm going to get legal repercussion. I'm going to take legal repercussion for this. To that, I say, you know, good for you. I've been in a situation where I had to report. Okay, I didn't sue anyone, but just being able to get myself to say, hey, I've been done wrong. That was the thought. And sharing it with someone else. It's not easy. A lot of people think that it's an easy moneymaker to just accuse someone of putting yourself in a situation where the world sees you. Hey, world, I'm a victim. Maybe there are some human beings out there who are like, maybe there's a woman out there who's like, could make a career out of lying about being raped, lying about just to get the money. Maybe there is one. But that woman is as fucked up to me as a rapist. Like, in both situations, they put their victims in a situation where they can never come back from. They're just terrible people. So, yeah, I guess I'm talking to an audience that's probably saying, well, how do you know Puffy isn't innocent in this story? I don't know. You're right. I don't know these two. And I'm admitting that a part of me is like, yeah, I could see it. I don't know this human being, but I'm ready to be like, he's guilty. Part of it is because of, and I'm putting this in parenthesis, I'm acknowledging this is more about me than it is about them. It has to do with this image of the image he portrays as the, hey, I'm Puffy the alpha male. And in my example of masculinity, as a member, as an ex-member of the cult of masculinity, part of being an alpha male, part of being the top dog, is not loving these hoes. Right? I remember on The Walking Dead, when they introduced Negan as a villain. He started out as a villain. Well, maybe he still is a villain, but there's a scene that, as he's still a villain, one of his lieutenants tries to sexually harass a woman that he and his team, like him and his crew, imprison, right? yeah, spoiler alert! And he finds the girl, and he finds the guy, and he kills her. Excuse me, he kills him, sorry. The his lieutenants or one of his subordinates attempting to attempting to rape a woman that they imprisoned. And he was like, "Bro, you know I have a strict policy against that shit," and he kills him. And it just showed to me, it was a new image of, oh wow. I didn't know in the definition of alpha male, there was that kind of code. I'm thinking in The Sopranos, there's a scene where Tony sticks up for a woman who gets beat up by one of his one of his guys, and and I think part of it he did it is because he hated the guy, but also because he felt sorry for the woman. Oh yeah, he killed the girl. That's right, right? He felt sorry for the girl. I guess maybe it reminded him of his daughters. And it's as if all the folks working for him, everyone else was like, yeah, but dude, he was a made guy. I mean, come on. She was a hoe. She wasn't your wife. You weren't supposed to give. Like, everyone was faulting him for giving a fuck. It's like part of in the cult of masculinity, part of the tenet, part of the rules, part of the policy, part of the code is no love for these hoes. Unless she's your wife or your daughter. If there's any of that, you don't give, I guess, Guba, I don't know if it's in there too, right? But you're not supposed to give a fuck. Like, women don't have value in that world. So to hear about Puffy brutalizing, being foul to this woman, just fits the image of, yes, I'm the alpha male, and I can get, you know, and I don't love these whole, fuck it, right? This wasn't a relationship. She was just a plaything for me. Why? Because I can. Bottom line, because I can. I became a rich, powerful man so I could do this kind of shit. So I could get this, like, to me, as a powerful man, it's a sign of respect. It's part of the perks of being powerful, is being able to shit on these women. And then when I get accused for it, be like, yo, she's lying. What the fuck? I'm a good guy. I would never do such a thing like that. And I get, yeah, there's nothing about Puffy that tells me he's, again, I don't know him personally, but there's nothing about that image he created that would tell me that I would not do that. I would not do this shit. If I did, I would avoid getting caught. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know Puffy personally, because I've been listening to other content creators weighing on this thing, and everyone's trying to be really like, and I agree with it. Everyone's trying to be fair in their assessment, and but yeah, no, I'm tempted to believe Casey in this story, but it looks like we won't hear anything about it anymore because the case is settled. But anyways, it's done. Who knows? Someone actually talked about how, yo, this might just be another Cosby. And that's the thing. I guess it's I like when people's images, like the curtain falls down. It's like the Wizard of Oz, or not Wizard of Oz, but being able to see people for who they really are. All right. That's my two cents on the subject. All right. And this is what I mean about pondering idea. It's not, I'm acknowledging the fact that I can only speak about the things that I can't speak about. I'm acknowledging the fact that I don't know Puffy personally. I don't know Casey personally. I don't know the details. All I know is like the X factor, that's the X. The only variables I get to play with is how the story makes me feel. And yeah, and in the end, I find myself hoping the best for Casey. I hope she gets all the therapy she needs. She recovers from the situation. And while hoping Puffy goes to hell. Now, I say this while knowing that I could be wrong. Maybe Puffy is the victim in this story. Maybe. It's so hard for me to believe it. But yeah. Let's just say, I don't know, I might have mentioned that at the beginning. But let's just say I could not be on that jury. Because I'm already like, yeah, that nigga did it. Why? Because he's black? Sort of. Again, more about me than it is about. Like, I'm trying to picture being in Puffy's situation. But the thing is, I don't have that. Okay, I'm trying to picture being in Puff's situation. Money, power, and respect. Because just landed on my lap. I guess the other thing, too, is I've convinced myself that people in his position, the money, power, respect people on that quest, have just gotten used to stepping, like, finding a group of human beings and looking at them as ants. You're disposable to me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't picture being me and have money, power, and respect as much as I would like it. But I believe that me and him are completely different people. Puffy is willing to do things that I'm not willing to do. And one of those things is being able to not love them hoes. You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. I love these hoes. When I say love these hoes, but I think it's, I don't know. Maybe, I guess, I wish there was someone out there to impress me. Like, yo, and I'm willing to have my image of masculinity reevaluated. But anyway, yeah, I'm trying to, yeah, anyway. Okay, that's it. Okay, I'm going to play this clip and then explain after why I'm playing it. Okay, the title goes, UN Special Rapporteur on Occupied Palestine Territory Eviscerates Guardian Reporter. All right? Well, you're going to talk about Palestine again? Yes, I am. Why? Because it's my goddamn podcast. All right, so here we go.
I couldn't help but being tripped up by the very ending of your speech where you said that ending Jewish-Israeli domination would be rehumanizing acts for them as well. I just want to ask whether that sort of comment is helpful in the current climate, talking about ending Jewish-Israeli domination. Word domination has a wider connotation outside that context.
What do you mean?
Talking about Israeli-Jewish domination.
Meaning, are you asking me in Israel?
Well, the phrase jumped out at me at the end of your speech, and I'm just wondering if the trope of domination.
It's not a trope. It's really real. So it seems not to understand what I'm saying. There is an apartheid regime. No, I'm serious. There is an apartheid regime. It's domination. This is not a trope. This is international law. I encourage you to read the Apartheid Convention because it talks about racial domination. And this is what I'm talking about. Might be a trope into the way you interpret it. But I'm using domination in a strictly legal sense.
Thank you very much for
answering my questions.
I love the look on her face, man. She was annoyed by that question. And I share her annoyance in the fact that what's been bothering me, if I'm talking a lot about Palestine, aside from, you know, I want free and aside from the atrocities being committed, but it's what bothers me is how I'm in a situation where, I'm gonna sound like these white guys and say, I can't say what I want to say anymore. Like, people are getting in trouble for calling it a genocide or for acknowledging the atrocities. It's basically you have to look at the situation through the same lens as Israel, which is the problem. It's like Israel is drunk on power. I get that. But don't force me to buy into your fucking illusion that, hey, you're committing crimes, war crime, buddy. If I share this quote, this video, I love her frustration. It's like, trope. Bro, I'm not making things up. I'm calling it like it is. And then these reporters are out there because they got their own, I guess, agenda or whatever. Because basically it is don't talk shit, don't talk against Israel. They're doing what they're doing. Just turn a blind eye on that shit. It's loyalty over fat. It's like, are you a reporter or what? And yeah, it's, I think that's what genocide is one thing. The being told to not call it genocide, it's not a genocide, or deny, or turn a blind eye. It's a nut, makes it work like it's, there's a psychological. It's fucking with me. It's a topic of conversation between me and my therapist, who would probably tell me, "Hey, dude, you really need to stop watching this news on Palestine, these atrocities, because you know you." Remember, you're a highly sensitive person, and it's not really that healthy. Okay, hey, not bad. What time is it? Okay, not bad. Two more to go. This one is a thought shared by a content creator on TikTok. And, hold on. And I like what he says about every act of violence. The thought goes, every act of violence is retaliatory. Okay. I'll let him explain his thoughts on violence, and here we go.
Do you realize that we're living on...
Sorry. Rewind. Content creator's name is... Jamin Lee Camlin. Goddamn words in English. J-A-M-Y-L-E. Okay, here we go.
Do you realize that we're living on one link of an uninterrupted chain of violence in response to violence? And each link was meant to stop the next one from emerging, but the violence just mutated and reproduced? Follow me through this one example and tell me I'm wrong. In 1914, Archduke Franz Ferdinand was assassinated by a member of a Serbian national group who wanted to wage an asymmetrical war to expel their occupiers. The retaliation spiraled into World War I, which killed millions of more people and ended with the Treaty of Versailles. The Treaty of Versailles humiliated and punished Germany, which led to a rise of intense nationalism within the country that created an opening for a man named Adolf Hitler to come to power. Hitler intensified and mobilized anti-Semitism in the country, leading to the murder of 6 million Jews in the Holocaust. The nationalism sparked by the Treaty of Versailles gave Hitler the mandate to start imperial wars all over the continent, which led to World War II, which gave us the atomic bomb, the nuclear arms race, the Cold War, the redrawing of maps, and relocation of people around the world, including the creation of Israel. Throughout the Cold War, the United States wanted to counter Soviet influence in the Middle East. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. So right. The Mujahideen were fighting the Soviets, and the United States backed the Mujahideen against the Soviets in Afghanistan. And those fighters that we supported formed the basis of Al-Qaeda. On September 11, 2001, Al-Qaeda attacked the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and took down another plane. And we responded with more violence. We invaded Iraq and Afghanistan and killed over 200,000 civilians. When we toppled the Iraqi government, we disbanded their military. This meant hundreds of thousands of Iraqi men were now unemployed, military aged, and living in a country being occupied by the United States. Many of those former soldiers went and joined Al-Qaeda to fight the United States in Iraq. Now, we were killing Al-Qaeda members like crazy. We were bombing weddings and normal people too, but we were killing a lot of Al-Qaeda members. And when their leader got killed, the people who were once Al-Qaeda joined up with the Islamic State in Iraq. When turmoil started to peak in Syria, they joined that movement as well and became the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. ISIS, for short. Every violent intervention we've chosen has created the stage for more violence. Wow. To the point that the use of violence to create peace must be the most thoroughly debunked dogma that we seem to still believe in today. But violence is a disease and it behaves like one. The more you're exposed to it, the more likely you are to catch it. Outbreaks happen in clusters and spread through communities. The answer to a disease has never been more disease. The idea that violence is necessary is a self-fulfilling prophecy. The mere belief of it makes it true. I'm ready to reject that belief. On a governmental level, the belief that violence is necessary means that only violent people can rule. Every leader of a world power stands ready to commit a massacre because that's what they've made us believe is necessary for our safety. Countless times throughout history, we've seen violence used to create a solution, only to create the conditions for more violence in the future and consolidate power into the hands of the people who don't care about us. It is our belief in the necessity of violence that makes it true.
Wow. Wow. Hold on, man. Let me give him a... Wow, right on, brother. I'm going to read this quote. Well, I was thinking of this quote by Martin Luther King. It goes, hate begets hate, violence begets violence, toughness begets a greater toughness. We must beat the forces of hate with the power of love. I have decided to stick with love. Hate is too big. It's too great a burden to bear. What? Okay. My first thought, my takeaway from what he said, for me, how I interpret it was the ineffectiveness of violence. While he was speaking, I was thinking about how in my first clip, sorry, gang. I'm a little distracted. Am I on two screen or not? Okay. I'm not sure what I'm doing. Oh, okay, sorry, gang. Let me just, there we go. Okay. Sorry, there's like two screens going on and my notes are just going all over the place. All right. The ineffectiveness of violence. I was thinking about the homie, what's his name? Mark Wayne Mullen, the dude who stand up in Congress goes, yeah, we could do this like gentlemen. And actually, he wasn't smooth. He didn't say, we could do this like gentlemen or hang out into gangster shit. And I said, you want to go, cowboy? You want to go, boy? Cowboy? You know, white people shit. White people fight. And it reminded me of how, okay, I'll just get to the point, is I used to resent myself or not like the fact that I wasn't the violent type. I put on a show, but I don't go into, I could kick his ass, I could kick his ass, I could kick her ass. Nah. I'm not a violent type. I probably watch a lot of violent movies. I probably listen to a lot of violent rap lyrics. That's probably just to try to desensitize myself. But I am not, by nature, I am not a violent person. Maybe I could be, but I don't want to find out. And I resented myself for not being a violent type because I believe that part of being a man is being able to fight. So it's always been a sore spot for me. I remember this one time I'm trying to think of a case. I've always been sensitive to people thinking I'm a punk. But the one time, I remember I was dating this one girl. And we were in a situation where this person, you know, we were eating out. We were outside eating on a public bench, something like that. And we were downtown and some person with mental illness issue just comes up and starts yelling at us. And, you know, and he's looking at me more. And he's like, hey, motherfucker, and blah, blah, you know, and things like that. He was just yelling at us. Now, I recognize that dude. Because I've seen him before. This was around my work. And I've seen him every morning. And he's always, like, yelling at people. And people just seem to just ignore him. Just fuck it. You know, he ain't going to do shit. Just let him do things. And so I ignored him. Not realizing, not picking up that the girl that I was with was actually nervous, scared about the situation. And was also expecting me to do something about it. Like, make me feel safe, homeboy. And, of course, I didn't pick up on it. I was just in my own mind and ignored the situation. I told myself he's going to go away. Later, she brought it up and pretty much summarized and said, yo, that was the day when my pussy dried up around you. Now, I'm not sharing this story about... the reason I share this story because I remember feeling like, fuck. You beating myself up for like, and you should have kicked his ass, man. You should have did this, should have blah, 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 blah. Basically, you should have acted the way Tupac would have acted. You should have acted the way your favorite gangster rapper would have acted. I remember like cussing myself out while trying to acknowledge the fact, but that's not you. A, that's not you. And that chick could kick rocks, you know, but I took it as a. Anyways, it's always been a sore spot for me that I am not a violent person, that I only perform, that I only put on an act to convince people that I can get violent. And and my journey to I'm on the list of things to what sent me into therapy, on the list of things that made me feel like I was not meant to be part of this world. because if society collapses, I'm fucked. I'm gonna be someone's bitch. And like there was no place for people like me. And what I appreciate about what he's saying is he's pretty much, look, our society was built courtesy of violence. A lot of violence has happened for us to get to the point that we're at. And it never occurred to me to look at it as, okay, that's cool, but it's ineffective. It's primitive. We've been using violence to get to where we are. We've been using violence to resolve conflict. And it never occurred to me that, what if, like Martin Luther King was saying, what if we resolve conflicts without violence? And that's where people like me come in. I mean, sure, unfortunately, it's going to take a bunch of motherfuckers who can fight for people like me to to be able to resolve, like, people like me, when I say people like me, highly sensitive people, empathetic people, should be in position of power. Should be able to make this, should be the ones who make, this is like one of those, when they say that I wish women controlled the world because the rest of us fucked it up. It's things like that, these notions, where conflicts are resolved peacefully or without the use of violence. Use your word. Imagine that kind of world. Imagine a world where, hey, look, like, hey, we need to change this form of government. And it was as simple as, okay, let's just install a new hard drive. I mean, let's just install a new operating system. That simple. I mean, okay, I'm being a dreamer, but I do love how he acknowledged, I agree with it, violence is like a fucking disease. It's plaguing the streets of Chicago. It's plaguing the Middle East. It's plaguing, like Ice-T said, man, when he in Colors. They hit us, we hit them. We hit them and then they hit us. It's like a cycle. I mean, I could if I was in the streets of Chicago, some rival gang just killed a relative, I'm out for revenge. I can picture myself being stuck hell my whole life. That's just my life. Just want revenge. And meanwhile, people are talking self-destruction. You're headed for self-destruction. Man, fuck the black. I don't give a fuck if we're black people are dying, black men are dying on these streets. I want my revenge because I'm emotional like that, right? Anyway, yeah, I just, hearing them speak about the ineffectiveness of violence makes me realize that people like me need to speak up more often. Not to be like, yeah, fuck him up. Someone to say, whoa. They do have a point. Actually, I was in a situation this week where, okay, I'm going over time. I was in a situation this week at work where one of my colleagues was in a bad mood and how do I say that? Basically said some foul shit. And I was trying to get him to understand the other side of the conversation. He did some foul shit against the other some other people, and I was trying to, no, I wanted to help him understand the other side. It's like, wait, maybe they weren't dissing you. Maybe they just, I'm trying to describe the scenario. But my point is, when Martin Luther King talks about love, or when in Jesus, turn the other cheek, I've always understood turn the other cheek as not necessarily be a bitch. It was more like understand the other person's grievance type of shit like that. Understand that if you walked a mile in their shoes, you'd be kicking your own ass. You know what I mean? You'd be doing the same thing, kind of things like that. See, I understand that kind of shit, even though it's not practical. Well, not in this society. But I understand the whole, when you're in a conflict, take a breather. You understand your point, like seek first to understand, then be understood type shit. I understand that, all that kind of things. But again, I'm a dreamer. I don't think it's going to be a while before we become a society that can resolve global conflicts without the use of violence. Sad, eh? It's kind of sad. All right, gang. All right, okay. Last but not least, before we get to... oh shit, I can move it. Oh shit. Okay, guess what I'm doing right now? I'm moving the, okay, sorry. Okay, let me close this thing here. I'm in, I don't know if you use RDP, remote desktop, and there's like the top bar, what's it called? Doesn't matter. I did something with the computer I didn't know I could do. All right, okay. This article, we're going to read this together, and by we, I mean my bot, and it's called The Thousands, because the title just made me laugh. It goes, thousands ghosted by their AI girlfriends after company CEO jailed, Jesus report. So I saw that headline, and I'm saying, I'm going to read this on the show. So here we go. Hold on a second. No, thanks. Okay. Bear with me as I'm waiting for the robot to load, and here we go. AI girlfriend, AI reader. I don't tell my therapist, fuck human connection. I'm going to get me an AI girlfriend. Hold on a second. Why aren't you reading? Why are you embarrassing me in front of all these people? Oh, man. Hold on a second. You're going to make me read this out loud, aren't you? Okay, here we go. Man, this is so embarrassing. Fuck. You know what happened is, so I'm using this product, it's called Natural Reader. And I got to tell you, man, this shit sucks. It works when it wants to work. Fuck. You think it's... AI is giving me lip here. Okay. One more time. If not, I'm going to read it myself. How much time have I wasted trying to get this stupid thing to read? No. Oh, fuck you. Oh, man, I'm so mad. All right, okay. Thousands ghosted by their AI girlfriends after company CEO jailed, reports. Thousands of users have been unable to access the service of AI chatbot company Forever Voices since its founder and CEO was arrested, according to media report. You know what's kind of funny is how I'm reading an article about a story about how AI girlfriends weren't available while my AI robot that I use to read my articles is not being available. There's like an interesting link, man. Here we go. Okay. New Delphi. Thousands of users have been unable to access the services of AI chatbot company Forever Voices since its founder and CEO was arrested, according to media reports. Forever Voices stopped its operation on October 23rd following the arrest of the company CEO, John Mayer. I'm not laughing at the name. It's more the, what the fuck? He was arrested? Mr. Mayer was taken into custody for allegedly burning boxes in his building in Texas. That's it? It reportedly caused him an estimate of, is that three? Yeah, 3 million. No. What am I looking at? What is that? Okay, that's zero. What the fuck? There's a zero missing here. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Maybe that's why the AI bot doesn't is not reading it. An estimated of $360,000 in damages to the building. There's two commas, so that should be 3 million, and I can't. And I guess it's 60,000 in damage. Whatever. Fuck. Someone made a mistake. As a result of this, Forever Voices went offline. Well, why does he got to be around? Leaving many of its users wondering why their virtual girlfriend had suddenly stopped chatting. That's not funny. Forever Voices created AI chatbots based on real people, like influencer Corinne Marjorie, using Telegram for users to chat with virtual session of these personalities. Even though the platform wasn't meant for adult content, users began having sexual conversation, causing the AI chatbot to become more erotic. Bookmark this shit. As of October, users paying to talk to chatbots like Karen AI no longer have access to them. But why the fuck would that have to do with HIP? Before the service went offline, the Forever Voice account posted a series of unusual conspiracy theories on Twitter involving the FBI, the former U.S. President Donald Trump, and rogue CIA terrorists. However, Karen Marjorie revealed the next version of the chat box on October 30th, named Karen AI 2.0. She mentioned that Karen AI had been acquired by the tech startup Banter AI in a six-figure deal. I am very excited for Karen AI and users to experience a new upgrade in AI companionship, she said on Twitter. It says X, but I'm saying Twitter. I'm not going to read the press release about the acquisition, but and the rest of the, I'm just going to stick to the article. Miss Marjorie assured that the new chatbot girlfriend will elevate the entire experience, ensuring that no DM goes unanswered. Damn. You know what I'm thinking about? Yeah, man, I won't be surprised. I'm not talking shit about the users of this product. I won't be surprised if I end up in a future where my girlfriend is AI, and I got to explain that to my parents. How their daughter-in-law is a machine. You better respect her. And maybe that would get my Christian parents to be like, you know, we would have rather you were gay. I'm like, now you better respect my choice. Whatever. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. That was a bad joke. Yeah, I thought it was funny. This shit made me chuckle. We're quiet. You know, I am going to look into this thing. you know, that's another different conversation. All right. Holy shit. I went on longer than I should have. Okay, gang. This concludes News and Random Thoughts. So let's get to final thoughts. And fuck. I feel like making this podcast a two-part series, but here we are, right? You know what? This is the part where you can take a break and come back and listen to it later, because final thoughts might be just a bit longer. Just a bit long. Whatever. It's gonna take the time it takes. So here we go. Before I get to final thoughts and explain what's up with the title, I talked about Andre 3000, and he said something that made me think, and it kind of relates to a little bit of the final thoughts. He's talked about how Andre 3000 speaks on him rapping at the age of 48. And I'll just play it for you, right? And I'm 48 too.
Now, like, people think, oh man, he's just sitting on raps, or like he's just holding these raps hostage. Like, I ain't got no raps like that. Like, it actually feels inauthentic for me to rap, because I don't have anything to talk about in that way. Like, I'm 48 years old, and not to say that age is a thing that dictates what you rap about, but in a way it does. And like, things that happen in my life, like, what are you talking, like, I gotta go get a colonoscopy? Like, what are you, what do you rap about? You know what I mean? Like, my eyesight is going bad. Like,
but you're not just any rapper. Like, you're a top five, you know, to many people. To me, it's like you're basically being like, I have a very beautiful sports car in the garage, but I choose never to drive it, you know, which is your talent.
Talent is one thing, but honestly, it's, I think timing and momentum is more important than talent and the energy of it. Like, talent, it's a lot of people with talent. And we're seeing that now. Like, there's so many dope people on the internet, like, that are just raw, but it's your timing, is what you're talking about. It's if you're catching the zeitgeist of what's happening in the world. And like, my goal is I want to connect.
You know, it's there's a whole article. I didn't get a chance to read it because I'm not gonna put it in the show notes. I like putting articles in the show notes that I didn't read yet. For all I know, there's a part in there that says, "Man, fuck Be Black." Yeah, I'm not gonna share. Okay, I'm not gonna share. But the one thought I do have is how one. Oh, I don't know if you heard. So Andre released an album, and it's he doesn't rap in there. He's just playing the flute. And two, you know what? Let the man be. He doesn't want to rap. Don't let him. Don't force him to rap. He just shouldn't have to explain himself. Look, I just reached a part of my time where I like, I respect that. I understand that you reached a part in your life. This is what you want to do. Then, and you have the opportunity to do it. Good for you. Now, the one thing I will disagree on, I say that, you know, keep doing what you're doing, but I do disagree on if I was Andre 3000's homeboy, I'd be like, nah, man, you do have stuff you could rap about. Maybe you don't think it would make a good rap song out of it, but a person like me, I'm also 48, yes, I kind of want to hear you rap about your colonoscopy. I need to, you know, rap used to be my older brother. Used to be my guide. It's like I used to turn to rap. It was health and unhealthy. Explains why I looked up to. That would explain why people like Mark Wayne were is that his name? Yeah, Mark Wayne Mullen were my role models. Yeah. So there was a good side and a bad side for turning to rap for guidance into becoming a man. Sure. On one end, I like the social politics thing. You know, the politics and made me aware. But on the other end, hip-hop was telling me shit that... hip-hop went from being like, yeah, man, when you grow up, you're going to have these bitches, you have this money, you're going to have all this car and shit like that. Now I feel like hip-hop is calling me a bitch. It's like, you broke-ass bitch who gets no bitches. Ain't selling these drugs. What the fuck you doing with your life, square-ass? Like, hip-hop makes me want to hate myself lately. But that's not the point. I say this because I wish I could find rappers rapping about shit that I could connect with. Drake has an album that recently came out, and you know, I was listening to it. I'm not done listening to it, but the beats, the production's good. But I'm fucking annoyed about him rapping about these chicks that I can't afford. Like about how he could take them to all these great places, and I'm over here talking about AI chatbots. I want a rapper to, what I'm missing in my life is some inspiration. I'm 48 and I'm looking at life I have difficulty looking at life and not believing that the best days are gone. Ain't shit to look forward to. I was having that thought because I'm stuck in this rut currently in my life where I'm like, I'm not saying that's okay. A lot of people disagree with me and they're not wrong, but right now there's no light. Dion Cole has this joke that's really clever, and he says that, remember when you were young? Remember when you were the future? And I feel like I'm at the age where I can't, no more when I grow up, I'm going to be this. No, you're grown up now. Now I'm like, there is no when I grow up. There is no, like maybe I could think about where I'm going to be when I'm 50, where I'm 55, but fuck. It's hard for me to not think about these age and not think about croak. I'm like, yeah, I feel like a senior. I know I'm not a senior citizen, but I feel like I'm in the category of human being who should just, all I should think about is packing it up, wrapping it up, because it's all over. Like, what is there to look forward to? That's where hip-hop used to, that's where that void used to be filled in. That's what the space hip-hop occupied for me. It gave me, like, things to consider. Things might happen. Now I feel like everything that could have happened ain't going to happen. And that's shit that, like, I would love to hear Andre 3000's worldview. And maybe that's the problem. You can't make you can rap about it, but it's not going to sell. Maybe that's why I listen to spoken word. But yet, I've yet to hear the spoken word artist who, similar problem as me. But yeah, I'm looking for an art that it would inspire my outview, my view of the future. With that said, as I was trying to feel down on myself, it hit me that I might need to resuscitate my comedy career. I call it career, comedy hobby, or whatever you want to call it, but my journey into comedy. Because when I was in comedy, there was always that, well, maybe I'm going to be a superstar. Like, there was something to look forward to besides every show, but also think about the future. I think that was the last time where I found myself, when I was in comedy, I was thinking about, well, maybe I might turn this into a career. Maybe, like, there was so many possibilities out there. And also, I do remember having this notion that being on stage was like one of those moments where I'm happy with life. When I'm on that stage, okay, not just when I'm on that stage, but when I'm on that stage and I'm and the crowd, and you have the right audience and the circumstances, all the circumstances to make a show successful all come together. Like, that moment is like, oh my God, blissfulness. Anyway, so what's up with the title? And I was thinking about what exactly in 2020 caused me to stop doing comedy. And it's funny, is you know what, I'll just summarize, because I made a list of things popped up, but the one that's on the number one on my list was keeping the smiles off their white face. I had reached a point after George Floyd died where the notion that white people were laughing at my pain, because self-predicate? No, what's that word? When you make fun of yourself? Fuck, I forget what that word is. But anyway, I make fun of myself. But a lot of it comes from an actual pain. And it bothered me that I know it's comedy. I forgot the fact that I was being a comedian, but I hated the notion that white people were laughing at my pain. I'm not trying to say, yeah, next time I do a comedy show, white people can't laugh. That's not my point. But it was just the whole, like, white people already have so much. Like, it's bad enough white people are like, what pain? It's worse that I'm, like, making it a form of entertainment for them. Like, it's keeping the smile off their white face. I love how Tupac explained it. I remember when I caught that line. He said, what did he say? He goes, bald Mexicans, you know? Yeah, he goes, they can shoot one nigga, but they can't take us all. Let's get along with the Mexican, and we could all have pizza in the sets again. Imagine if that took place. Ha ha, keeping the smile off their white face. All of us coming together. Being who we, yeah, exactly. Eh? Yeah, I got jokes about black, do I have a joke? I might have a joke about black incompetence somewhere in there. But, you know, it's like, do I really need to be one person? Do I really need to be another black comedian giving that as material to white people? Hey, white people, we can't swim. Hey, white people, I don't have a dad. Hey, white people. I have to deal with the burden of racism, and it's a pain in the ass. It was just, I remember when I talk about my comedy career, I was more open micer. I mean, I've done a few professional shows, but on the resume, yeah, open mic guy. And shit, there's a point I was making. Open mic. Fuck, I forgot the point. Oh my God, this happens. Maybe it's because it's late. Maybe it's all that weed that I smoked, and I'm gonna smoke some more weed later. Right. I forgot the point I was about to make. Yeah, doing comedy. Fuck. Feel like hitting play. I forgot the point. This is embarrassing. Okay. All right. You know what? Maybe I've already said what I wanted to say is, like, there's other issues with comedy that bothered me, right? Especially, you know what, also too, Did I mention, I mentioned this in the past episode, I'm in the process of writing a letter to 3GO, and part of that email, part of the message I want to send is to talk about, articulate my gripes with comedy. Because the gripes that I have as a comic is not the kind that I could share with people in my hometown, because they wouldn't understand it. They wouldn't. Here's the thing. I live in Ottawa, in a city called Ottawa, and it's the capital of Canada. And the comedy community, it's dominated by white dudes. Like, they run this shit, man. We got two major clubs in this city, and they're run by white dudes. They're like the gatekeepers. They get to decide what's funny and not funny, what makes sense, doesn't make sense, and it fucks with me, man. It's like, add that to the list of reasons why. Maybe it's not being a comedian that's the problem. It's being a comedian from Ottawa that might be the problem. I was talking about getting feedback. Sometimes I've gotten feedback that made me, I don't think you, that made me realize that you don't understand the core of this joke or the point that I'm trying to make. Basically, it's feedback that I was just ignored. They were just useless. And, oh my God, I'm talking about 3GO, right. Part of this email that I'm trying to write to them, because they're, most of them are comedians, well, they're all comedians, is basically, is it advice? It's, here's my story, what do you think? How would you handle my situation? Even though I know, I think by putting the idea, the thought down on paper, that's when I could, it probably helps me in the healing process of doing jokes again or getting on that stage again. Because I did enjoy it, man. I did have a good time on that stage doing comedy. But I just, the whole giving white people more material to, more material to make their lives better as opposed to my own. Do you know what I mean? Like, I won't lie. When I, part of what I enjoy about doing comedy, I feel like it's my public service. It's my service to the world, making people laugh, which is why I'm not the kind of person who makes jokes that hurts other people's feelings, unless you had it coming. Oh, that's another thing that used to bother me about the community is it was filled with insensitive white folks who would write up jokes, right? They weren't fucking funny. It was funny to them, but not to the rest of us. They were really stupid, or sometimes it was practice. And then they would have the audacity to be like, oh, the only reason you're not laughing is because you don't have a sense of humor, or you're being too sensitive, or you're caught up on that race. You know, it like they had some fuck. It's like these white dudes, in their mind, they created, using their superior white brain, they created this joke that you should find funny. And I made a rape joke. You're supposed to find that shit funny. You know what I mean? But they just made jokes that reminded us of their fucking privilege. In the show notes, I'll share it in today's show notes too, for the show notes for this episode. I talked about a comedian from Toronto. She's now lives in New York, I believe. Her name is Salma Hindi. I've met her before. Cool human being, man. Cool ass human being. And and she's funny. I should mention funny. Yeah. And she was talking about a story of, she was at a show, and some dude, white, guess the race, goes on and says, makes a punchline about how Palestine doesn't exist. It's good. I don't know what the joke is, but the punchline involved having to say Palestine doesn't exist. Now, this motherfucker must be pure, again, so used to white people, pure oblivious of, hey, some of us are willing to kill over that shit. Like, oblivious of the possibility that, hey, I got a daughter who died over there. I came to this club to fucking laugh, and all you just did is reminded me of my situation. Anyway, so she talked about how he... you'll hear the story herself, but I could picture myself being in her shoes. She had a moment between, do I respect my communion side or do I respect my human being side? Or am I, that's family being killed out there. Like she's distraught by, like all of us, like most of us, distraught by what's going on, of the people dying, children dying in Gaza. And she was caught between which side do I respect? And she went with her human side and basically jumped on that stage and said, what the fuck? Well, I'm paraphrasing. She didn't say, she handled it way better than I would have handled it, but basically said, yo, that was a whack-ass joke. And a white dude came back after the show, you know, got all defensive and talked about his right to make jokes and try to be funny and all that. And here's the thing. Yes, I do believe as a comedian, yes, that's what it is. We are all entitled to the right to be funny. But when you get the feedback that, yo, that shit wasn't funny, bro. I mean, it's funny to you as the white person who's on the comfortable side of oppression. But to the rest of us who are feeling that shit, it's not funny. It'd be like equivalent to showing up to a funeral and people are in tears and I'm just making jokes about, I'm making jokes about the person in the casket that are fire. But everyone is like only making their sorrow worse. That's not funny. I believe that's where, that's where the line ends between funny and not funny. If you're the only one laughing, it's not fucking funny. And I understand, like, you know, I've been in a situation where I made an attempt to be funny and someone took it as, oh, so you don't like women? I'm like, whoa, that's not what I was getting at. No, I understand that part. Yeah, there are some people who have stick up their asses. But fuck. But when it comes to white people, one thing I refuse to have is a discussion I refuse to have with white comedians, white male comedians, is about free speech. Because to me, it's just another attempt on their part to use to drop the N-word. Yeah, free speech. You know what's going on? It's because I'm thinking and I was slowly remembering the point I was trying to make, but then it's gone again. Yeah. I refuse to have a debate with white people, white male comedians, about free speech because when I think of white people used to entertain themselves at a black body being lynched. That was like a form of entertainment for them. Look at that nigga, whatever. I remember growing up and these white kids dropping the N-word. Not just dropping the N-word, but jokes where you're dehumanizing the other person. There was this big thing in Newfie jokes, right? Yes, Newfie jokes. And I'll be honest with you. First time I heard Newfie jokes, I had no idea we were talking about human beings. I had no idea what a Newfie was. To me, it was just some kind of caricature. Later, I found out that Newfie is short for someone who's from Newfoundland. Oh, shit. Oh, wow. Those jokes. Like, I used to love Newfie jokes until I realized, oh, we're talking about people. You know, yeah. I remember growing up, white people making jokes about niggers. One little, two niggers, three little niggers. Okay, whatever, right? But it was dehumanizing. And they're looking at me going, no, I'm not talking about you. We're talking about niggers. You're not a nigger. We're talking about actual niggers. And it's like, ain't that a joke about lynching? You know what I mean? Like, it'd be like really insensitive jokes. What I'm trying to say is, I think this is where I was going with this, is how I do believe to me is comedy is my good I share with the world. And I was, oh my God, I just realized. Yeah, it's my good that I was sharing with the world and I felt, didn't want to share it with a group of people who had it all already. The thought I just had is, it hit me as I've always had the ear, the talent to be, I've always I've considered working, giving my time, volunteering to the helpline. But I remember stopping myself because I said, yeah, I don't want to get a phone call from some kid talking about, yeah, I want to kill myself because my dad won't let me drive the Bentley. I was like, oh, you motherfucker. But that's not fair. That's not fair to the people who actually need the work. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, maybe there are some, like, maybe there are some people who deserve to laugh. No, I'll say it. There are some people who deserve to walk in a comedy club, even white, and laugh. Thank you for making me forget about my day. Thank you for giving me the joke that opened my eyes, exposed me to a reality that I was never exposed of. I would have never thought of. But I'm not thinking of that person. That's my problem, is I'm thinking of the unworthy. It's like, ha, 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 ha. Yeah, black incompetence is making me laugh. Ha, 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 ha. Yeah, I just, anyway, I'm still working on it. Actually, you know what? Maybe I should give myself credit because last night I actually went to a comedy show. And shout out to my homeboy, Habib Siam. Am I pronouncing his last name right? Okay, Habib. Yeah, Siam. Okay. And yeah, man, I love seeing that dude work on stage. I have a few people in the comedy community I consider older brothers. He's probably someone I'd have this conversation with. But it's so funny. The last time, I remember probably what really put a nail in the coffin is the last time I saw him perform was during COVID, some maybe 2020 or 2021, and he was still getting used to the stage because he was still getting used to having a screen in front of his it was a tough set for him, but it wasn't the fact that he wasn't a tough set, because I could be at a show where a comedian's having a tough set and I just learned from seeing him go through that tough set. It's just a learning experience. What fucked it up for me is there was this white lady in the audience. There was a group of white women. And he was making a joke about the Canadian identity. And this white bitch screams out somewhere, like something about how, Canada's only is the only country. He was talking about the Canadian identity. And she misunderstands the joke and just says, yeah, like she's trying to contribute to, yeah, part of our identity is not giving a fuck about our own people. That's the usual argument against immigration. It's like, yeah, we care about all these people from the outside, but we don't care about the people. It's just one of those racist, is it trope, the word I'm looking for? She did a racism. And I remember wanting to go 0 to 100 on this woman. But a part of me was like, wait, I don't want to fuck up his show. Hold on, you know, let him handle it. But the thing is, he didn't hear it. Apparently, I'm the only one who heard her say that shit. Because I remember after the show saying, y'all didn't hear it? And everyone's looking at me weird. So maybe I'm making up racist incidents in my head. Some Tyler Durden shit. But I remember that was the nail on the coffin. That was like, there was other incidents that led up to it. But that was the last incident that said, man, fuck this city. They don't deserve my comedy. Fuck this city for life. And yeah, no, I've been dreaming about, you know, doing comedy in front of a black audience. Whatever. No. A more receptive audience, so to speak. Not people who are going to give me feedback. Hey, have you tried not being too black? I know your name is B Black, but have you tried considering not being so black? You're really black. What's with all this race shit? You know what I mean? That's the city I live in. People bring up who knows? Maybe, what are we, 2023? Maybe a lot has changed in the 3 years. But I remember, yeah, having motherfuckers come up and say shit like that. It's like, you know, just because you're black, you don't have to do... have to talk about that black shit. It's like I wanted to stab you in your throat. Anyways, yeah. Something about Ottawa that just... something about being doing comedy in Ottawa just, like, fucked it up for me, man. I shouldn't have, but it's the feelings I'm processing. It's what I'm going through. It's my journey. It's what I'm trying to heal from. I'm sure it's a lot deeper than that, but at the core, I believe that I was just trying to put smiles on white faces, man. And when I say white faces, I'm talking about, I remember doing comedy, when I first started out doing comedy, and telling myself, yo, if I ever get to a point where the only people showing up to my, only people laughing at my jokes are a bunch of Klan members, I'm done, fuck it. And black people are looking at me in shame and embarrassment and cringing, it's like, oh, fuck. Then I know that I'm on the wrong path. I'm serving the wrong audience. But it didn't turn out a bunch of Klan men. No, it turned out to be a bunch of I don't see race, all lives matter type of white people. Or, hey, just because you're black doesn't mean you have to do black shit. Why don't you talk about how you can't swim? Stupid shit like that. Why don't you be more like Cosby? You know what I mean? Why don't you be more, it's just, respect the fucking art, man. Respect the art. I understand, yeah, you know, sorry, I'm having a conversation in my head. Yeah, I'm going local. But, yeah, that's about it, man. That's about it. I'm, this goes to thoughts that I wanted to, pondering with ideas, what I was talking about earlier. Pondering ideas. And, I'm processing this, and this is going to be all in this beautiful email that I'll be sending to the good people of the Three Guys On at some point. Well, I'll tell you what, before the end of 2023, that's for sure. All right. Hey, last point before I leave, besides a New Blue Sun by Andre 2000, an album and I was listening to one of the songs while preparing for this podcast, and shit, it was relaxing, man. It was, anyways, I look forward to digging this album. But something else that happened to me this week is I discovered a new song by Fonte, and it's called So Help Me God, and the shit is dope, fucking dope. Yeah, shout out to Fonte makes music for people my age, I should say that. But there's a lot, I love how he ends the rhyme, his rhyme with, you're only as old as your ability to process new information. You hear what I said? You're only as old as your ability to process new information.
Message!
That's badass. Yeah, this was just my opportunity to say, hey, you should check out Fonte's new album because it sounds dope. And I guess you should also check out Andre 3000. But with that said, this concludes today's episode. What are we? Yeah, we went. I went overtime, but I anticipated it was going to be a long episode. If you stuck to the end, and yo, Be Black is very grateful for you and your attention that you've given me. You did me a favor. You did me a solid, and I'm very grateful for that. While I'm bitching about the world, the one thing I won't bitch about is you. So with that said, you could holler at me if you wanna, you know, interact, connect. If there's something you felt, if I said something that made you feel something, holler at me. Your options are, you can find me on these Twitter streets. I am at B Blizzard or at Shut Up Podcast. On TikTok, at B.Black. I should mention that if you're going to, I'm also on Instagram or on Threads. And both at Shut Up Podcast. But If you're really serious about getting in touch with me, you want to find me at my headquarters on the internet, and it's shutuppodcast.com. What was that? Shutuppodcast.com. One last time, shutuppodcast.com is where I reside on the internets. And email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. Again, on this on the website, you can subscribe to the RSS feed that's on the website. If you haven't done it already, go to there's an RSS feed, copy and paste that shit. Or do what other civilians do, go to Google, Apple, and Amazon Podcast. Thank you for listening. Yes. I feel like I'm forgetting something. No, okay. Thank you for listening. And remember, please be kind to your favorite podcast. Okay? All right. Peace.
I am your king now!